Let's give our animal friends a break. Adopt one now, for goodness sake.
Perfect. I wonder what they, I don't know. I don't know what they mean by give them a break, but I guess we can explore that as we go along. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week we've got a book that I am in no way qualified to talk about, except insofar as it is more or less about, I guess, the Berenstain Bears. They don't really play a huge part in this, except they are the characters that we are dealing with. But the real push of this book is the notion of pets and pet rescue. Now, we've dealt with pets in the past with the Berenstain Bears. We've seen how they acquired their dog. We've seen how they acquired their cat. We've seen the death of a goldfish. But this is the first time we're really getting into the nitty-gritty of pet adoption and pet rescue. And as such, I am bringing on someone who is a bit of an expert in the field of pet rescue. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of all ages, please welcome to Deep in Bear Country, Avian Jangula, founder of Glorious Purpose Animal Rescue, and a person I have known for how many years now? Like 15 years?
15, something like that.
Yeah. Hi, Avian.
Hey, Phil.
Welcome to Deep in Bear Country. So before we dive into this, I want to ask you right off the bat, do you have any history with the Berenstain Bears?
As a kid, I had quite a few of the kid books. My parents would read them to me. And then as I got a little bit older, I started reading the chapter books too.
Oh, wow.
So I've been aware of them for a very long time. I haven't read a whole lot of the newer ones that have come out more recently, but no, I've always had them in my life.
It would be very strange if you had read any of the more recent ones, having had no reason to do that. I have to commend you though. Like, I have so few guests who have read the chapter books like that, who were even aware that they existed.
Yeah, there's good ones out there. I mean, granted, it's been a really long time since I've read any of them, so I don't recall a whole lot of them, but I do remember that they were very fun.
They are very fun. I think the chapter books are probably my favorite, like, era of the Berenstain Bears, just because they get really weird, and I'm all about the bears getting weird. Now,
yeah, the one I do remember is when they did they made a newspaper. That's the one I remember.
Oh,
I don't know why I remember that one.
The gossip rag.
Yes, that one.
I think that's the one where they got in trouble for writing a story about one of the teachers dating a student.
Yep. It ended up being his niece.
It ended up being his niece. But, you know, you're not expecting in a Berenstain Bears book that controversy to come up. So, you know, kudos to Stan Berenstain. All right. So this week's book is 2019's The Berenstain Bears Pet Rescue by Mike Berenstain. This is a book that gives Mike a good chance to flex his drawing muscles. He loves drawing different kinds of animals. He loves taking readers through a process. That's kind of Mike's big strength. He loves walking us through how different jobs work and how different aspects of the society that children might not be privy to function. Sometimes he does a really good job at telling us how that happens. Sometimes he doesn't do as great a job. I don't know anything about the pet rescue world. So Avian, would you tell us, what's your history with pet rescue?
Sure. I have been in pet rescue for almost 5 years now. It'll be 5 years at the end of June. So when my husband and I moved into our new house in 2019, we knew that we wanted to do rescue. We had met with a foster group where I live in Burnsville, and they had a booth set up every weekend. We would go see the kittens and play with them, and I always wanted to play with the kittens. And they said, "Do you want to foster?" And I said, "I would love to, but right now we're living in a one-bedroom condo with two cats of my own. So when we move, we will do fostering." So in 2019, May of 2019, we bought our house. At the end of June, we went to Petco and said, "Okay, hey, we bought our house. Where's the application for us to foster?" And they said, "Oh, do you want to take some kittens home today?" And I said, "Okay." So we ran home and cleaned up the room, and they ended up coming home the next day after they went to the vet. But we had four little kittens, and That was my first group of foster kittens. And it just kind of went from there. And so in that time, I've fostered for a couple different groups. But currently, I actually have started my own rescue. We started at the end of August of this last year, which is Glorious Purpose Animal Rescue. Right now, we only foster kittens, but we're hoping that, one day in the future, we may be able to expand that into other animals with dogs or maybe smaller furry animals as well.
Now, full disclosure, we have two cats in our house that we got from you. They were part of a litter of a massive litter of kittens that came out of a cat at your house.
Yes, that was Demi. She was actually my first pregnant mama that I had, and she had six kittens, and also all of them survived, which was amazing. But she was just the sweetest mama, and I was a wreck just waiting for her to have these kittens. She was very calm considering that she had six kittens inside of her. But I was just waiting and waiting and waiting. And actually, I think based on the date, tomorrow would be their birthday.
Oh,
So.
good. We were wondering. We had kind of we were kind of sketchy on the details. We did celebrate Artemis and Apollo's birthday last night with them. They got a few new toys, so it's something that we always make sure and check. But when you say that you were on edge, the internet was on edge for a while because we were all following this with bated breath. This poor pregnant cat who was just not ready to give birth until she was ready to give birth.
Yeah, and it was right at the beginning of the pandemic when everything shut down. And so I actually just on a whim was like, "Hey, I'm just gonna do a live stream to show you the mama cat." And I did, and everybody just got really excited and were like, "Oh my gosh, when's the kitten? When are the kittens coming?" And so I, we waited and waited, and eventually she did give birth to the kittens. It was on, I believe it was a Saturday morning, and it was about 9 a.m. and she started giving birth, and I was like, "Oh yay, I'm home first of all, so I can, help her with him." And she had six kittens, and they were all really healthy and cute, and she ended up being a really good mama. And so that was the first pregnant mama that I ever had, and I think since then I've had five or six more.
Oh wow. And it's funny that like the whole growth of this business of yours, the rescue started, like you said, like near the like a little before the pandemic. And then because of that like birth, it really sort of became us following along, people following along with how the cats are doing, being able to check in with them, see what's going on. There's something that's really about getting to know these animals as they're growing that really makes it, I don't know, like I was invested emotionally, and I don't get invested emotionally in things like that.
Yeah, and I think just the fact that people were kind of looking for things to do during the pandemic was certainly helpful. And then I actually had one mama cat who went a little bit viral. Her name was Gilly. She was an orange tabby and really young, like probably in human years equivalent to about 13, so very young. And was just a massive avocado of a cat. I put her on the All Orange Cats Share One Brain Cell Facebook
Yes.
group, and was like, "Can somebody give her the cell so that she can have these babies?" Because she's been hanging on to them for a really long time. And everybody was just like, "Oh my gosh, they need to know when this mom was having her babies." And so I ended up creating a Facebook group for her, and then she had her babies. And then after that, eventually that specific Facebook page turned into our rescue group Facebook page because the people wanted to still continue to follow the journey of the other fosters, and then subsequently our own group.
Yeah. So what is the definition of rescue? Like when you say an animal is a it's a rescue animal, what are the strictures of that defining an animal a rescue pet?
A rescue animal would be considered an animal that was taken from one situation and put into another with the intention to either rehabilitate, make it healthy, or in the event of, something very tragic happening, giving it, a peaceful death. But definitely the goal of rescue is to take an animal from a bad situation, whether it's outside or from an abusive situation or a home that can't care for it, and then find a better home for it that matches with its personality.
Yeah. And this is as opposed to an animal that was bred or raised to be sold or adopted.
Correct. So rescue animals are usually ones that you will find outside versus ones that are specifically bred by breeders, which oftentimes are specifically made with certain characteristics in mind, and usually are more purebred, mm-hmm. versus a rescue animal is more likely to be a mix of whatever is out there at the time.
Right. Yeah, you don't get, I guess the only time you would get, we'll talk about it when we get to it, because it's interesting that in this book, let's start dipping our toes into the Berenstain Bears pet rescue. They do mention, Mike doesn't mince words when it comes to where these pets come from. He does mention, animals that came from bad situations. But why don't you walk us through what the plot, if there is any, of Berenstain Bears Pet Rescue is?
So it starts off with a special assembly at their school, in which the local shelter comes by with a bunch of animal friends. They have different options. They have dogs and cats, birds, lizards, hamsters. And so brother and sister and their cousin Fred. Cousin Fred get to come up and play with the animals. And the volunteer who's leading the group, Patty, tells them, that these animals are up for adoption. And then Fred says that he actually has been looking at an animal at the shelter and has been playing with it for a couple of weeks and is interested in adopting.
So right off the bat, we have the animal shelter has come to the kids, I guess, to educate them about pet rescue. Is there anything here that stands out to you as, particularly spot on or particularly egregious or anything about the way Patty talks about her animal shelter? She kind of paints it in a broad stroke.
Yeah, she does, like you said, broad strokes. She says these animals have been taken from places where they were not treated well. They need special care to get better before they can be adopted by new families, which is very true in many cases. Sometimes they are taken from bad situations or bad homes, and other times they're not. It really just depends. Unfortunately, there's a lot of times where it's just people think that animals are disposable, and so they just decide to get rid of them. They don't want the animal, or they don't have time for it, or, whatever it may be. So, there's a lot of reasons that animals do end up in rescue. It is true, though, that they were not necessarily treated well. They were treated like they weren't important, which I think is something that's very, very sad when it comes to rescue, is just that, to us, all lives are important, and we want to make sure that everybody finds a good home. And ideally, rescue would never have to happen. I always say this is the job I wish that no one ever had to do. I would love it if I never had to foster again because all the animals had a loving home, but that's just unfortunately not the case. But with the animals that they do bring there also, there's obviously a variety of animals. And, that depends on different shelters and different rescues and what they do, because obviously there are some that specialize in a certain breed of dog or a certain type of animal. Then there's other ones like the Humane Society that have a little bit more of a wide span, where they have smaller critters and other things like that. So it really varies from rescue to rescue and shelter to shelter.
Now, when you say that one day you dream of expanding your organization into, you said smaller furry animals, what kind of animals does that include? Like, if you could blue sky it, what kind of animals would you like to have?
After dogs and cats, because obviously those are kind of the big ones, I'd love to do smaller animals like guinea pigs and hamsters, rabbits, sugar gliders. I always said, my husband said, if we ever rescue a sugar glider, we have a sugar glider now. but smaller companion animals. I'm not a huge fan of slimy, scaly things, so probably not lizards and snakes and things like that.
I think it's funny that this lizard Zippy that they've brought to the school, I saw it in the tank and I was like, I need to know where the lizard was rescued from. I want to know what the story behind the lizard is. Was it was there a drug bust? I have to assume the lizard came from somebody, some young adult's dank apartment building.
I'm trying to figure out what kind of lizard that even is, and I have no idea.
A fake lizard.
I'm guessing it's an iguana, but I have no idea.
it's a cartoon lizard. It looks kind of like a dinosaur. I'm really not sure. It's not a bearded dragon.
No.
And the hamster is clearly a cartoon hamster. It's mm-hmm. adorable. So you said that, you know, Fred's like, oh, as a matter of fact, I'm going to adopt a pet at the animal shelter. I'm going after school to bring it home. And so the cubs decide, well, they invite themselves along to the animal shelter. And let me tell you, this animal shelter, it's hopping.
Yeah, they've got the dogs and the cats all mixed together, and all of them are happy and playful. And yeah, it looks like it's pretty well organized, all things considered.
Do you usually just throw the dogs and the cats in together like that?
Not that I'm aware of.
In one big room where they just roll around with everybody?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I've been to the Cafe Meow, where they do like the cat cafes, yeah, where they have all the cats in one big room, you know, and that's one thing. But like, you know, throwing those in there with, you know, here's a Cocker Spaniel and here's a German Shepherd along with that. Like, that just seems like a really terrible idea.
I'm going to assume that these are all rescue animals that have already been like acclimated to human beings, and not just sort of all taught. I'm going to assume these are the ones that are getting ready to go out the door, because as you said, like, part of this is getting a lot of these animals like just comfortable being around people, because a lot of them come from situations where they, you know, even if they weren't abused, they lived in fear. They were, you know, they're hypervigilant. They don't want people to touch them. They were never socialized. So I mean, that it just seems like that's a big part of it.
It really is. And actually right now I have three little kittens that are about 8 weeks old, that were rescued just down the road from us in a wooded area, and they're still trying to catch mama and the other two kittens that were with her. But I've had these kittens for a week now, and they are just terrified. I mean, they're hissy and they're growling. I've been able to pick them up and hold them, which is great. And, you know, I'm making a lot of progress with them and socializing them and getting them used to people, but it's definitely a process. And yeah, I mean, you get animals that are not friendly and not used to people, and that's hard because you don't know what to do with them. You know, mm-hmm. you can't give them to a family, you know, especially if they could potentially hurt somebody.
Right.
But you also can't just throw them out the door and say, okay, good luck to you. You know, so it's difficult trying to figure out what to do with them. But luckily, at least with kittens, they generally can be socialized when they're young. So my hope is that eventually they will get over that.
Yes. Fingers crossed. I know they will. They'll be great. These animals in the Bear Country Animal Shelter. I mean, yeah, we got a couple of dogs. We've got a few kittens. We've got a couple of adult cats. They're rolling around with the cubs. And I mean, there's a lot of animals at this shelter now that I'm looking at it. And they seem pretty comfortable.
Yeah. No, I mean, it seems like they've got it all pretty organized. And, you know, they've got the volunteers there, you know, taking care of them and playing with them. And, you know, that is definitely something that some shelters will do, depending upon the situation. Obviously, I foster out of my home, so I don't just have random people come to my house to play with them. But, you know, people do come over to visit and see them. And, you know, it's good to socialize the animals, because that's, first of all, they can get used to just you. And that's not helpful when it comes to adopting them out to a family.
When a person comes and is interested in adopting an animal, like, how often do they come visit with the animal, more or less, before you let them take it home?
Usually once or twice. It really depends on the situation and also how old the animal is and where it is in its health journey. So an animal, when it first comes in, probably has not had any vetting. So they haven't had shots. They haven't been dewormed. They haven't been fixed. Being fixed is the big one, because, you know, if you don't fix your animals, they're going to go out and make more animals. And then you just end up with this big cycle of here's more kittens, here's more puppies, here's more animals to take care of. So getting them fixed and getting them vetted is definitely a big first step. So once they've had their initial shots, then people generally can come look at them and see if they bond with one and want to take it home. But then we want to make sure that they get all the rest of their shots and get fixed before they go home.
Nice. And I am sure the animals in the Bear Country, like pet rescue, have had all their shots. How else would you let guinea pigs and hamsters, parrots and lizards all mingle with one another?
Right. with a bunch of bears.
I noticed that the hamsters are named, it looks like Henry, Hamlet, and Horatio, which I find very, very amusing. There's a guinea pig, there's two lizards, something, and T-Rex, Zippy and T-Rex, and then three birds, peaches, mango, and blueberry. Now, this strikes a familiar chord with me because you tend to give your kittens themed names for easy tracking, and you have gone, you've sort of gone through, like, you went through, you go through, they're not always the most obvious. Like, it's not just like Game of Thrones characters.
I try personally to be unique with the names because there's so many common names out there. I mean, you're always going to have Bella and Shadow and Max, and it's like, so when I'm contacting the vet, I don't want to be like, hey, I need Bella to come in, and they'll be like, which one? So I try and pick unique names for them, and sometimes people keep the names and sometimes they don't, and that's perfectly fine by me. But I like to give them themes. So especially when I've got mamas, pregnant mamas, I'll name them one thing and then their kittens will be a derivative of that. But otherwise I try and just kind of keep it in the same genre or the same idea. Right now the kittens that I have are, since we found them in the woods, I wanted to give them kind of floral names. So it's Sorrel, Hyacinth, and Hibiscus.
Aw, those are great names. What amused me was that Artemis and Apollo's mama cat was Demi, as you said. So all of those kittens' names were derivatives of Demi, like Demitas. I can't remember all the rest of them.
I'm not even gonna remember all of them.
Demi.
Demi Gloss.
Yes.
Gloss was Artemis. Gosh, what was Apollo? Demi.
I can't remember. Was one of
I
them
can't remember.
Urge?
Yep, Demi Urge. That was another one adopted by a friend of mine. I'd have to look up what the other
Yeah.
ones were, but
But
yeah,
what's funny
but.
is it's essentially the same thing as there's that New York Times daily puzzle where you have to figure out how words are related to each other. And so many of them are essentially that. Like, it's like, why don't I can't oh, I see. There's like a so you got to jump on New York Times 4 years ago. So yeah, so we meet the dog that Cousin Fred is going to adopt. It's a little caramel colored dog named Taffy, and it is certainly cute. And we just spend some time hanging out with Taffy.
Got a very Scooby-Doo looking collar on with the blue and
Yeah.
the yellow tag.
And you know from Scooby-Doo.
Oh yeah.
I think it's one of the first things I think I ever knew about you was your Scooby-Doo fanhood.
I still am very much a Scooby-Doo
When you have so much Scooby-Doo now to be a fan of, it seems like every year there's just more and more variants on the theme.
fan. Oh my gosh, yes.
So yeah, so they play with this little Scooby-Doo-esque dog, and then they take her home. It's funny because they go there and they're like, "Oh, what a cute dog." Sister and brother then kind of like sort of work their way into the dog ownership at this point. They actually get a ride home in the back seat with the dog, like in the parents' car. And by spoilers, by the end of this book, they start referring to it as their dog. So a little ownership incidents here. So what do you think? What do you think of the way the behaviors they show with the dog? And especially when Taffy gets home and just kind of does a lot of exploring. What the sort of the portrayal of a new animal being introduced into a new house.
Well, that's definitely fairly accurate in that, the animal is going to have to get used to everything. It says that she was very curious and sniffed and poked into every nook and cranny. And that's true. I always say with kittens, if you think they're not going to get into it, they will. I've had multiple shelves come crashing down that I didn't think they could reach. But yeah, an animal getting used to their new home and their forever family is definitely, it takes a lot of time. Luckily, when they're younger, they're a little bit more adaptable. And especially if there's other pets in the household, that generally, comes together a little bit better. But yeah, a new dog or new cat is going to take time to adapt to a new home. And figure out what their place is and if there's other animals, figuring out the pecking order and who's in charge. And they might find their person, or they might be more of everybody's animal. So it really just depends on the individual animal. But yeah, giving them that adjustment time is really important. A lot of people, they bring the animal home and it's scared and it doesn't want to play with them. And they're like, well, what's wrong? I want to play with you. I want to hold you and, show you love. But, you got to remember that these animals are coming from situations where they're not used to that. They've been in somebody's house for a couple of weeks. They've sometimes been left alone for a while. They've gone to the vet. They've had different experiences when, especially when they're babies. Everything is new and fun, and then all of a sudden there's a whole new place that's new and fun. So it's definitely an adjustment period.
Well, Taffy seems to love exploring in the backyard. There's a really funny image that Mike has of Taffy's tree to squirrel, and it says that the squirrel dashed up a tree where it chittered angrily, waving its tail at the annoying dog. And there's I don't know, I think it's a pretty charming drawing of an angry squirrel up in a tree.
As a giant squirrel,
It is a giant
or Daffy's a
squirrel.
very small dog.
I mean, or it's a very small tree, I can't really tell. Actually, you're right. The scale is very weird on this thing.
Yeah,
But
because
there is.
if you can look and see, like, it almost looks like raccoon sized when they first
Yeah.
go out to the backyard.
And a couple of panicked bluebirds. Not unusual behavior for a puppy. So, if you let your puppy out in the backyard, it's going to tree a squirrel. So yeah, they play frisbee with Taffy until she gets all worn out. And the thing I pointed out was the last page where it says the cubs gathered around their new friend and gave her a big group bear hug. They loved their new rescue pet. And I'm like, it's not your pet, kids. This is cousin Fred's dog. But nope, they've laid claim to Taffy just as much as Fred has.
I did read this, and this is just me being a weird grammar person, but shouldn't it be gave her a big bear group hug?
I think Mike wanted to put the words bear hug together. A big group bear hug, I think is the way it's supposed to, I think it's the way it's supposed to be read. When you read enough of these books, that kind of syntax becomes very,
I
very
suppose, yeah, there's
natural.
kind of bear everything.
There's bear everything. The bear, you may know this because it's from one of the chapter books. Bear Country's version of Barry Manilow is named Barry Manilow. And we only know this because there was a cardboard cutout of him in one of the mall stores where they were selling records. So that's, I mean, that's it. Literally, this book is just the pet rescue people talk about pet rescue to the cubs. The cubs go with Fred to get a dog. He gets a dog. Like that's your plot. There's nothing else really happens in this story. No character development, no major arcs. But the reason I really wanted to have you on the show is because I wanted to get your, I mean, besides just not having spoken to you in a long time. Besides that, besides having a podcast being my way to actually reach out to other human beings, I wanted to get your like if a parent bought this book for a child, how good of an overview of the idea of pet rescue do you think it gives realistically for a kid reading?
There's definitely a lot of good points. When the volunteers talk about that they came from a bad situation, or they need to be loved and to find a good situation. That's definitely a big part of rescue and fostering, that I think that maybe children don't necessarily understand. They don't understand the bad things that can happen to animals out there. Or you can say, yes, this animal was living outside, but we've seen that in cartoons and things like that. So it's not necessarily it doesn't necessarily register what a bad situation is versus a good situation for an animal. So I think that's definitely a good starting place. There's when it comes to the actual experience of adopting the pet, yeah, you want to go and meet the pet and see what they're like and make sure that you like them and they like you and that they bond with you. There's obviously this is very idealized when it comes to how an animal will feel and how it will react, and also just it's a cl it's very clean and it's very fun. It's not always clean and fun. Pet rescue is very messy, and it's got a lot of heartbreak sometimes too, unfortunately. Obviously, that's not something that's easy to explain to kids. You know, obviously they have their the stories, you know, where they lose the goldfish and things like that. You know, so they do explain things like that. But they're, yeah, it's very much an idealized version of how you would rescue an animal versus maybe the reality.
Right. And but one thing one thing I admire about this is simply the fact that Mike decided it was important to put a book out there about pet rescue, as opposed to, because we, like I said, we've seen them get animals other way. Like they got their dog from the farmer whose dog had a litter of puppies, and they got I can't even remember where they got their cat from. This is one of the first books I've ever seen that intentionally takes the point of like, we are rest like this is a good way to get an animal. Like, you don't need to go to a breeder, you don't need to go to like a puppy mill. There's a lot of animals out there that need loving owners and loving places to live.
Yeah, I think that's really great because, again, we don't necessarily as a society kind of push the whole rescue aspect because it's not always pretty. You know, we say, oh, let's go to the pet store and get an animal, or, you know, oh, my neighbor's cat just had kittens. Here's a kitten. But, you know, specifically rescue is just so important because, again, there's that aspect of making sure that the animal is cared for, vetted. You know, given a chance to have a loving home and without being sold for profit, essentially.
And one thing you said at the very beginning of the episode that stuck with me, and it's something that I've always honestly admired about you with your pet rescue, is the fact that you said sometimes it's not about finding a new home for them. If pets are in more dire situation where they're probably not going to survive, or it's about giving them a place where they can live out the rest of their life in comfort and dignity. And I've always been impressed by your approach to the non-romanticizing of this very important work you do, but also being realistic and being like, it's like you said, it's not all fun and games. It's at times a heartbreaking place to be, and having that sort of teaching that ed like educational for kids that not every animal makes it, and sometimes just giving them that feeling of safety in their final days or weeks is just as important at times.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, that's something that's really, you know, deep and hard to explain to kids. That's, you know, they can obviously see when an animal is hurt, but a lot of times when it comes, especially to like little babies, there's hereditary reasons, you know, or something going on that you can't see that is harder to explain that they just don't make it, and that's definitely hard. You know, it's hard to deal with. It's hard to watch that. And children don't necessarily understand the why. I think they understand, you know, that it happens, but there's not necessarily that understanding of this is how the world works, which is kind of unfortunate. You know, I don't think we should shy away from teaching kids about death, and especially when it comes to a pet. You know, you don't want to tell the kid, hey, in 12 years we're gonna have to put this dog down. That's, you know, that's neat fun. But it's definitely something that we need to keep in mind, that we want to give them the best life possible. We are their life. Like, they don't, you know, they don't travel around the world, and they don't go to school and do the things that humans do. We are their life, and so we want to give them the best life that we can, and then give them dignity at the end.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, Avian, thank you so much for being on the show and talking about the Berenstain Bears pet rescue with me.
Thank
If
you, Phil.
our listeners wanted to find out more about the work you do, where can they go?
You can actually go to our website. It's Glorious Purpose, GLO. I'm sure, well, watch me spell this. GLORIOSPURRPOSE dot com. Wow, I can tell I haven't spelled in a while. But Glorious Purpose, and it's a you'll definitely tell you're in the right place. It's got a cat with little Loki horns.
Oh, right. Makes sense. Makes sense. If you know Avian, that makes sense. For everyone else listening out there, thank you so much for joining both of us today. If you're looking for a pet, look up your local rescues. They're out there, and they always are looking for people to take and meet the pets. And a lot of them are always looking for financial help. I know that. It's not a cheap business. If you're interested, look that up. There's all kinds of resources out there. Otherwise, you can find me at my other podcasts. It's Del Toro Time that I do with my daughter Willow, and Pizza Toast that I do with my friend Christy. We'll be back shortly with more episodes of both of those. Avian, thank you once again for joining me.
Thank you, Phil. It was great to talk to you.
It was great to talk to you. And for everyone else out there, I'll see you all next time deep in Bear Country. And that's the show. That's how the show goes.